Hi everyone, welcome to episode one of Catch Up with Cassidy, a new podcast by me, Gary Cassidy. And the first thing I need to do is say thank you, because if you've got this far and you're hearing my voice right now, it's because you've at least clicked play on the podcast. So with that thank you also comes an apology, because if you've listened to me doing anything, if you're someone who knows me, there's a good chance you might have heard at least one or two of the stories in this podcast. And I turn out to be like that annoying friend that you've got that tells you the exact same story every single time you're out with them. But that being said, I think the only place that I could start, the only thing I could do for episode one, is address something that I get not really on a daily situation on Twitter, but it's something that I get quite a lot. And it's questions about how I ended up being where I am in wrestling journalism. So with that being said, let's start for the start, and we'll just go through it all and see exactly where we end up. And hopefully, I don't have you here for 3 hours. So I'm not going to tell you my life story, because no one's really interested, and there's plenty of time to dip back if there is anything interesting at all anyway. But whenever you're talking about, getting into a field, and if it's something that you do for a living, which I'll get into as well, you need to start a little bit further back than your first day on the job. So for me, growing up, I was the same as everyone. You want to be this, you want to be that. You chuck in, footballer, watching wrestling. Wrestler's the first thing. Anyone who's seen me knows I'm in no shape to be a wrestler. Fireman is in there. Everything's in there. Astronaut. All the things that very few people go on to actually do, and they're not unrealistic, because I mean, if you want something hard enough, then you're probably gonna at least be in the frame for it. But none of those were things I really wanted to do. So it got to a point where I was like 15 or 16 in school, done media studies, and I'd kind of had a little idea in my head that journalism was a field I wanted to go into anyway. But media studies kind of half cemented it, half made me think, what kind of journalism do I want to go into? Ended up after that going to college, going to university. Got a degree in media studies. It was mainly journalism. I ended up, all the modules I took ended up being journalism oriented, but I really wanted to learn about marketing, advertising, and all that kind of thing. But ended up, doing that, got some experience in some newsrooms, working for Paisley Gazette, Clyde and Forth Press, and a few other newspapers they had under that umbrella, and the Daily Record, which anyone from Scotland will probably have heard of. I've done two very different things there. I've done crime journalism and I've done entertainment journalism, and I very quickly realised that I didn't want to be a journalist. So, as you can see, things have slightly changed from then. Because I do write and get paid to write, but not quite any of those two fields. Crime journalism, a lot of people, one of the biggest criticisms that I get on Twitter, is normally about not reporting on things and on allegations directly. And that's just because it is somewhat of a minefield, in terms of in terms of reporting on that, and in terms of reporting on criminal cases. Anyone who's studied journalism will be able to tell you that, but the most of the criticisms come from people who don't really know the ins and outs, and it just looks like you're trying to sweep things under the carpet. But as an example, when I was working for Paisley Gazette, someone got, and that this is their mistake, but they got the name of someone who was, I believe they were up for some kind of serious assault charge. I don't think it was attempted murder, but it was something along those lines. They got the name of them wrong, got not only a lot of death threats for doing so, which is obviously not great either, but they were kind of close to being prosecuted for that error. And not only them, but the editor as well, because it's not just a journalist thing. The editor responsible for putting it out has some liability there as well. So that there's a lot of kind of things like that, and reporting on crime was never what I wanted to do anyway. So after that, I was kind of looking into entertainment, and that it was more along the lines of what I wanted to do, but that was writing a couple of bylines for the Daily Record, and it was mainly about pop music, and it was also the kind of thing where it was you need to write for people who, not that, like, I don't want to say have low intelligence, they didn't actually say that directly, but it was write very simple and make sure that you're writing simple, chucking a lot of puns in there, which anyone that follows me on Twitter knows I've got no problem with a pun, but it wasn't a good fit for me. So after that I decided, you know what, I don't want to do anything to do with journalism. And then that's where we always get the thing where, you know, people say, well, how did you end up writing about stuff? Because if you don't want to do journalism, then you don't do journalism. And I didn't for many years. I kind of tried to work out what I wanted to do. Done, you know, a little bit of everything. The main thing was graduated from university, because I was determined I wanted to get my degree. Essentially, I came from a family where none of my parents, you know, my dad was in Mensa. I don't think he's still a member, but he was part of Mensa, but he didn't go to university. Neither did my mum, and me and my sister both, I think, kind of wanted to do that. They kind of said to us, you know, that would be a good thing to do, would be earn your degree. So done that, and it was just a case of then trying to find a degree related job. I wasn't in a position to move to London, which is where most of the jobs seem to be. So it was kind of along the lines of, let's wait it out, let's try and do little odd things here and there. And it was essentially working in retail, and you know, you're then just doing what you can outside of that. Which was my chosen field then was music journalism, and writing about rock music, because you know, anybody that knows me will know that I love pretty much all forms of rock music. Like, absolutely love pop punk, love metal, love anything. Wee bit of hardcore, like literally anything in terms of alternative sounding music, even though I hate the word alternative. But done that, and you know, absolutely brilliant, because you get to go to all the gigs in the world you want for free, and normally you'll sometimes get the offer of doing a little interview as well behind the scenes, and like, that's the kind of thing where growing up, if you've not been in a band or anything like that, which I wasn't, you know, have no musical ability whatsoever, but that's the kind of thing that you're like, oh, this is absolutely mind-blowing, great getting to do this kind of thing. And then you realize that, you know, again, much like going back to the footballer, astronaut kind of analogy, it's quite difficult to make money in that field unless you're incredible at it, or you know, unless you manage to write for a Kerrang! Or a rock sound or something like that. It's very difficult to make money from it, but it's amazing if you can afford to do it as a hobby. But when you're working a full-time job and kind of trying to get out of that full-time job because it's not what you want to do, like working in retail, sometimes these things fall by the wayside. So it got to a point where I thought I'd taken it as far as I could take it. Interestingly, I thought it would never amount to anything really in terms of actually making any impression. But I went back recently to check my backlinks, which is something I'll get into when I speak a bit more about, you know, actual how you would actually do journalism, and that's the worst grammatical sentence for a journalist to say, but it's something that I'll drop into. But when I was checking for backlinks, I actually found an article that I wrote 10 years ago has been referenced on Wikipedia with me being named as a critic for this album, which is Avalanche United by I Am the Avalanche. Still one of my favourite albums, so it's great that it's one of my positive reviews that's ended up there, because I wrote a fair few negative ones as well. But yeah, done a load of that, and it was great fun, but it just wasn't paying the bills. So actually, for a good, I want to say about 8 years, I've done absolutely zero writing. Obviously, you know, like, you, it's not the kind of thing where if you're good at grammar and you're good at spelling, you don't tend to get worse at it. It's not like you end up like completely rusty when you get back into things. Maybe you forget a little bit about, you know, sentence structure. Maybe you get a bit of writer's block. Thankfully, not something I've ever had to deal with. But that's the kind of thing where, for me, you know, I was always like, I wouldn't mind getting back in it in some way, but just now I need to try and just get like a good job, a job that pays well, and you know, can actually earn you money rather than just like living with my parents as I was at the time, and not really being able to spend a lot of money. So gave up completely, done a load of things, done stewarding for an owry, which was great, looking at peregrine falcons. Done, and anyone that sees me will probably laugh at this, but done a little bit of modelling. That was when beards were a thing and I had a beard, so that's my justification there. But the one good thing for that is I ended up with my photo up, and I think it's still there in the Doc Martens store in London, or a few of them. I know Oxford Street had it, and I think the Camden one had it as well. Ran my own clothing label, which was great fun because I know nothing about technology, so it was all based on hand-drawn designs. But it was, again, it was all things that I was doing. It was really fun doing them, but it didn't ever seem like it was going to be the kind of thing that would pay the bills. What I forgot to mention is in there somewhere, when I was applying for a lot of jobs, I applied for a job as a subtitler. And a subtitler, for anyone that doesn't know, and that, believe me, from all the taxi drivers I've spoken to, no one tends to know it's a thing. But as someone who subtitles television, pre-recorded television comes with subtitles, live television comes with subtitles, and I could probably do a full episode of this, and I might do in the future if it's something people actually care about hearing. It's a wee bit boring. There's some funny anecdotes, but not sure if it's something people care about. But I applied for a job as a subtitler, didn't hear back, heard nothing back, and then about 4 years later, I kind of got to the point where I actually ended up unemployed for the first time properly, the first time in my life. I'd had like a week or two here, but I'd always get another job or some kind of job part time, anything. But I actually ended up unemployed for about 6 weeks, got made redundant, I think, for the third time, which is obviously a little bit unlucky, but ended up going, right, well, this is where I really need to actually make a go of, all or nothing, try and get a good job. And I applied to be a subtitler again, which was brilliant because I got accepted literally that day. Got a phone call about 2 hours after applying, and then ended up with the job starting like a couple of weeks later. And this is the kind of thing where, if you look at my Twitter, up until recently, I didn't even have subtitler in the bio. People might, for seeing anecdotes, they might know that that's something that I did. But I think most people think that I'm a full-time wrestling journalist, which is where I'm always a little bit hesitant to reply to the DMs that I get on Twitter asking how you become a wrestling journalist, because I almost feel like saying, look, while I've done well with it, I've never wanted to take the risk of doing it full time because I really enjoy subtitling. It's the kind of job where, it's really easy going for me. I always, when I was working in retail, I was always like, if I need to work in retail the rest of my life, I'll work in a CD shop because I get to go in dressed how I want, get to, it's quite a laid back feel. The only thing was there wasn't money there and it was retail, which kind of can grind you down a little bit. But, subtitling, you can wear exactly what you want. The only real skills you need to have is being good at grammar, good at spelling, which I mentioned I had that from being, from writing. I don't want to say being a journalist because I definitely wasn't a journalist. I was just kind of trying to dip my toes into the fields, but I still had those skills there. And I've always been quick at writing, quick at typing, not quick at typing as such, but don't get mental blocks and stuff like that. The subtitling, the only other thing, which is quite funny now based on a lot of the comments I get on YouTube, is you need to be able to work voice recognition. And if you've got this far in, we're about 13 minutes into the podcast, and you can understand what I'm saying, then you're probably doing better than a lot of the people that watch the videos of me interviewing people on YouTube, from what I can gather with the comments anyway. But as the second Wreck-It Ralph film has, never look at the comments. That's a piece of advice that I think is absolutely brilliant for anyone to take on board. But I digress. So voice recognition technology, I learned how to use that, and subtitling's just been the kind of thing where I love it because I love watching TV. For better or worse, I spend my life in front of TV, which is probably how I ended up with the wrestling journalism being a thing as well. So done that for a good few years before actually starting to do anything. I was doing a little bit of, other things on the side, trying to just do something to fill a void, because I've always been the kind of person where if I'm standing still, I'm bored. I feel like I need to always be active, always be doing something. And while the subtitling is great and it's a job that I would be always be very hesitant to give up, no matter how much money was on offer from elsewhere, I feel like it's the kind of thing where you're doing something different every day, but you're not able to use your initiative as like you can use your initiative within reason, but you're not able to go out and really grab the brass ring to coin a wrestling terminology aspect of it. So it's the kind of thing where I always wanted to be doing something else, something I was in control of. And then somehow, one day, I'm scrolling through Facebook, back when I used social media a lot more than I do now, but I'm scrolling through Facebook and I just see that a wrestling website that, I'd kind of dipped in and out of wrestling by that point. I'd watched it a lot when I was younger, had kind of fallen back into it and been going to a lot of the shows in Glasgow because ICW had just had this big boom. So I'd got back into it just to the point where I was casually, I was watching it all the time, I would say, but I wasn't like majorly into it. I wasn't reading wrestling news all the time. I wasn't even too familiar with wrestling journalism. I didn't really know it was a thing. And this is only about 5 years ago, so it's probably quite embarrassing to admit. But I was like, oh, wait, you can write about wrestling. I mean, I've wrote about music, I've wrote about football a little bit, but I've never even considered wrestling. So I ended up, I was like, oh, cool, just give it a go. And the website was only looking for contributors. And I ended up going, do you know what, I'll submit an article. Little did I know that contributors weren't meant to cover news. And I was, hammering out about four or five articles. It was like I took a week off work just, to have a week off work. I wasn't going on holiday anywhere. So I was like, I'll just bang out a couple of articles and see how they go. See if they make my wee bit of money. If not, I mean, it's just going to be cool to be doing something again where I'm, using my own initiative and able to be a little bit creative, able to post some stuff on Twitter that's not just what food I've had, stuff like that. So I'd done a couple of articles and I remember the very first article was actually bizarrely about what English Premier League team John Cena supports. I mean, I don't want to judge the guy. I don't think he's that keen on the English Premier League or football that's not the NFL. But he had gone to Tottenham Hotspur Stadium and took a photo with the Tottenham Hotspur top while he was in London doing a WWE live show. So I wrote that article, wrote a few more articles, wrote a little bit of football and stuff as well. And then it was like, right, we want to actually bring you on board because you're good at doing news, you're doing it really quick. A lot of the writers are annoyed at you because they've picked up an article in the newsroom and you've written it already. So we'll bring you on board. So I've done that, and it was just the kind of thing where I was writing about news quite a bit. One of the questions that I always get asked, which I'm going to lead up to, is how you end up getting interviews, because it's one of the things that, I think my path to it was quite bizarre. And I get why a lot of people probably get a lot of rejections, and I get a lot of them as well, which I'll get into. But that was never something I'd even considered. I'd done a few interviews with small local bands when I'd done music journalism. I'd never done anything like, the way I've went on to do them. But I'd written a load of articles, done a thing that in journalism is called aggregating. Particularly wrestling journalism, you'll spot this a lot, and it's a good thing. It's brilliant. I love it. Both doing it and being on the receiving end of aggregation is great because as long as everything is written correctly and backlinked correctly, then it gets you more recognition, you get other people more recognition. And journalism shouldn't be this cutthroat field that we all think it is. We're essentially all working together in a way. Sometimes it's competitive, but we're essentially all working together because if somebody gets good content, you can reuse that content and put them over and essentially you get some benefit, they get some benefit, and it's great. So I was doing aggregation, and I wrote an article on a wrestler that people will know called Elias getting a Fender guitar sponsorship. And this, the news was broken. I need to apologize to the guy, but it's Darren Paltrowitz. He had written it for either Guitar World, something along the lines of some guitar magazine. I always forget what one it is. But lovely guy, Darren Paltrowitz. Still a guy I'm in touch with to this day. And I've got him to thank, and you've got him to blame for creating a monster. Because I covered his story with Elias. He reached out to me and he said, Thank you for covering that. The editor wasn't sure if wrestling would work, but the fact it's been picked up by a wrestling publication has, essentially justified me covering it. If there's anything I can do for you, just let me know. And of course, when anyone says, if there's anything I can do for you, just let me know, I'm not sure if it's just a Scottish thing, but I immediately think, they're never gonna, I'm not gonna reach out to them for a favour because I don't want to be that guy, and they're not gonna offer a favour because they've just said out of courtesy, it's just a nice gesture. You're never gonna hear anything else from them, but it's nice of them to offer. And it was like, no, really, I can hook you up with either. And he told me Jim Ross or Diamond Dallas Page. And I was like, man, if I get to interview one of those two, I grew up watching WCW, WWF when it was Attitude Era. Those are two people that I know the name of for a start. I've never interviewed a big name. I was like, man, that would be just amazing if I could do one of them, as an interview. Then even if I done nothing else, I would be absolutely delighted. So I reached back out and I was like, well, either would be amazing, but DDP is a big WCW fan. DDP was a big favourite of mine. I would love to interview DDP. So he hooked it up. All credit to him. He hooked it up, and I'm so grateful because he hooked it up and I got to do that interview. I remember doing it. I should mention I'm clueless with technology. So I did it with my phone, with a broken iPad and a little tiny microphone plugged into that iPad and draped over my phone. And I shouldn't have said that's too loud, but that's the way I done a lot of my interviews that were over the phone for the next 3 years, because my phone network doesn't allow conference calling to be recorded on my end. I should just look into going to a different phone network. I won't bury the phone network here, but I should look into that. But I've now found a technology that allows me to do it on computer anyway, and obviously most things now are through Zoom. So it's fine. But yeah, so I done that interview, was delighted after it. I almost feel like I should never look back at that interview, because I probably asked a lot of rubbish, terrible questions because I knew nothing about interviewing, but I must have done something right because I think a few outlets picked it up, which obviously was mind blowing for me seeing, my interview on bigger websites and covered by good wrestling journalists who by that point I knew who they were, if I hadn't before. So that was great, done that. And then, after that I was like, right, well, if I don't do anything else, it's fine. But I suddenly ended up just getting a few opportunities kind of fell my way. I feel like I shouldn't say fell my way because I should say at that point I was of the mindset where if you're not sending emails, you're wasting time. I've now learned that, rest is important. Don't be sending emails 24/7 because you'll burn yourself out. Between that, the interviews and everything else. And of course, at that time, I'm still subtitling because I've been doing that ever since, like 40 hours a week ever since. They are great with me. If I need time off, I normally can get the time off. But I've been doing 40 hours since I've been writing about wrestling, and beyond before and beyond. Ended up getting, a few opportunities fell my way. I ended up doing some interviews for a small promotion called PCW Ultra. And I always try and remember who my second, third, fourth, whatever interviews are. I think the second one was Tessa Blanchard. So I'll move on quickly for that. The less said, the better there. But my second interview, I think, was Tessa Blanchard. Had Shane Strickland through them, who, of course, was Killshot in Lucha Underground, as now Isaiah Swerve Scott in NXT. Had Nita Strauss through them, who of course has been on NXT playing guitar. She's Alice Cooper's guitarist. And yeah, just had a lot of little cool things like that. But as anyone who writes about wrestling will know, getting access to WWE, AEW wasn't a thing at that point. Getting access to WWE is quite difficult. At that point, I wasn't even doing Impact interviews or anything like that. I was, I got to be on a couple of the press pass events, because another writer couldn't make them. And I was just doing the odd interview. I got, interviewed the likes of Al Snow, the former Darren Young as well, Fred Rosser. Just a lot of kind of, sending a lot of emails to people that were no longer signed with companies that, because, if you approach a WWE talent, you're probably not going to get a reply because everything needs to go through the PR. So I was just in that. I was sending emails every couple of months, like I said, if you're not emailing, you're wasting time, was my mentality. So I was like, well, if I not keep bugging them, because I wasn't sending an email every day or even every week, it was, you know, one every 2 months, just let them know I'm here, let them know I want to do interviews, kind of boast about the platform that you have, even though Scottish people don't like boasting, but saying, you know, I've interviewed DDP. That was my lucky thing, was that I could say I've interviewed DDP, and you know, that's a quite a big name for people to go, oh, that's quite impressive. And I had a few other renames on there, and then I had, you know, how many articles, you know, article reads I had, which is a nonsense anyway. I think to this day I've got like over 20 million, but it's not a big deal, because I always say this: you'll do an amazing interview and it could get 200 reads. I mean, they usually get more now, but back at that time, it could get 200 reads. Or you could write a really bad clickbait article and it would get 200,000 reads. So obviously, what one's more impressive on paper, the 200,000 reads is, of course, but then if you look at what the article is content-wise and look at what the interview is going to be a lot more substantial, more original content, you know. And that's it's a kind of annoying thing, because I've got a platform now, a decent platform, not like the biggest, not the smallest, but there's a lot of people doing great work that don't have the platform. And obviously, building the platform's work as well, which I'll probably save that for another episode, maybe touch on it at the end of this one. But ended up doing a load of those interviews, and then just still contacting WWE, contacting them. And just by some great luck, the WWE's TV deal was running out. So I think I'd have been fine anyway, in terms of, I think I would have probably got access there, because they were building, you know, the UK side of getting more coverage. And I think that was probably in prep for NXT UK as well. And that's where my first WWE interview came along. So the first ever live event, and not the first live event I went to, because I'd went to a few before, you know, Raw and SmackDown done UK tapings, went to, well, not Glasgow tapings, even the only time they've ever done Glasgow live shows. And I went to them, had been to a few live events, had been to a lot of your rubbish American style wrestling when you're younger, and they've got Kane, who's a big, really skinny guy wearing a pink suit and all that nonsense. So I'd been to a lot of them. But the first in-person interviews that I got to do, I got to go and interview, it was Amir Jordan and Kenny Williams on day one, and it was Kaylee Ray, who hadn't even yet debuted for NXT UK, and Piper Niven, also known as Viper to ICW loyal, and she had just debuted, and that was at, you know, Glasgow Airport, on the morning of the tapings that they were doing in Glasgow, and you know, got to go to those tapings and stuff as well, which was cool. But I remember sitting in the airport hotel, and who walks past but Shawn Michaels, just with, you know, whatever it was, Costa Starbucks Bagley's breakfast. And I'm like, my God, I've just seen Shawn Michaels walk past me. Can't ask for a photo or anything like that, because, you know, asking for a photo sometimes is fine. As I wouldn't say it's like the most unprofessional thing you can do, but I wouldn't have risked going to ask him on my very first appearance, you know, turning up, my very first time doing media opportunities, and then you risk the PR guy coming out and catching you getting your photo with Shawn Michaels. So it was like, I'll just acknowledge that this is a really cool moment to myself. And there we go. So done that, done the interviews, and then kind of weaseled my way into getting a couple of other WWE interviews that I probably shouldn't have got. You know, looking back now, the way that I, you know, the way that I deal with getting interviews from WWE and AEW for that matter, I wouldn't have done this nowadays. But it was like Mark Andrews' band was playing Glasgow, and I was like, well, I'll ask the band that he plays in if I can interview them. And they were fine, and I did end up getting that one cleared with WWE afterwards, because I didn't want to get the talent into trouble. Interviewed Leo Rush while he was on hiatus for WWE, and everyone thought he'd been released before he got released. And that was about his music career, but obviously sneaked in some wrestling questions. The same with Matt Riddle, which I interviewed him a couple of times, without the appropriate, you know, WWE consent. And that's the kind of thing that now, obviously, I would always go through them, because, you know, it's not the done thing, is going right around the PRs. That's a not a great way to work. But done that, was very lucky. got to interview a load of cool names, and then it was, just doing that grind every couple of weeks. And then I feel like I'm just rambling about people that I've interviewed, so I'll kind of tie this up here and mention that, that the kind of thing that you do, and that's essentially always contacting the PRs of the companies. If you can't find them, I mean, without sounding bad, you probably shouldn't be a journalist because part of that's finding out contact details. But yeah, so it's finding out those details, and then there you go. Just send emails and hope for the best. Hope that they acknowledge that you've got a decent enough platform to do that. And yeah, hopefully you end up getting those interviews. But otherwise, you're just emailing talent and then building a little portfolio interviews to make it look like you've got a good portfolio before getting in touch with them. So I think that's the easiest way to do it. And obviously, from that, I got quite lucky because, like I said before, the TV deal was coming up. So actually, after that, got to be on conference calls with Triple H, Stephanie McMahon, Rey Mysterio, a lot of good names, and got to go down to the London, the infamous NXT UK bus that people mention, even though they've got no idea what they're talking about because it wasn't anything to do with NXT UK. And the bus was literally just there because the full thing was they wanted talent on the bus around London to stop and take photos of them and to interview them on the top deck of the bus. Obviously, it rained, obviously, there was traffic. So we ended up just doing the interviews on the bus as it went round, getting kicked off the bus and certain areas so other journalists could come on and do that, and then going to the launch party. But I feel like that's like the kind of the basic level of getting interviews from it. And I feel like it's annoying because there's not much advice I can give there apart from you build your name, you keep sending emails, you keep emailing talent, and then you get those interviews with the people you can get them with, and then eventually you just build up a portfolio and do that. So done that, and all the while, like back then, before that, I actually completely missed out going down to Blackpool. So I'll get onto that because that was quite an important thing. Up until that point, that was at January, and that was literally days before the bus, the London BT launch. So that was a case of going to Blackpool, and at this point, I think I had like 2,000 followers on Twitter, just which is an okay following, considering I wasn't actually doing anything of note. I was writing odd article, mainly aggregating, doing kind of smaller interviews, and then posting jokes, posting anything, just stuff that was me, stuff that is me, because that's the main thing that I post, the stuff that I believe in. I don't, contrary to what people think, I don't go pandering to anybody on Twitter. I just type what I want to type. But done that, ended up, just kind of naturally building a following. I wasn't trying to get more followers or anything like that, but I had like 2,000 followers, and then went down to Blackpool to do NXT UK TakeOver Blackpool 2. Again, after the first NXT UK, that was like the other, apart from ICW, which I, go to their shows, cover their stuff. That was the other big event that I got to do before the world shut down, pretty much. So I'd done that. Went down there, got my hotel, went myself, got a hotel, met up with another person down there, which we'll brush past in a little bit, and I'll acknowledge that without acknowledging them by name. But went down there, done a few interviews, got a lot of NXT UK talent interviews, and it was just like me posting little videos, little snippets of what was happening. Gradually, my following was building up, and then I had the funny story that is fine because he knows about it, so I don't mind telling it on a podcast. But Triple H was doing I'd already kind of done a few wee, like over the phone calls where I got to ask Triple H the odd question on the conference call, but he was doing an in-person one, and I got to or I made sure I was going to get a question in because I seen Kenny McIntosh fit inside the ropes there, and I was like, he's going to get the first question in, I'm going to go and sit beside him. Sat beside him and got obviously the second question in. I asked whether Edge or Paige was going to return at the Royal Rumble. Obviously, he was never going to tell me, but I asked that question, and and he made a inappropriate joke about Paige, which I was so caught up in trying to write down the answer that I wanted, that I completely didn't even hear what he said until I went to the pub, listened back, and then went, oh no, how do I cover this? Because he made an inappropriate joke, but I didn't want to be, didn't want to be the guy that was like, hey, look at this joke, but at the same time, you can't manipulate the, like, you can't make it look like he's not told the joke because that's falsifying information. So I was like, right, and I just put the video out there, completely raw, completely unedited. Whether it was the right decision or the wrong decision, I think for me it was the right decision because, I always say integrity is the main thing to have. If you've not got integrity, you've not got anything. So it was like, I'll put this video out there unedited, and then, what happens, happens. Maybe people won't acknowledge it, maybe they will. Someone shared it, didn't they retweet it for me, they shared it on their own thing. We're like, another derogatory comment about Triple H, I think calling him Triple Nose, which is someone with quite a large nose myself. I feel personally offended. No, I don't at all. but they done that. And then we ended up with that going, not viral, I hate that word, especially now as knowledge issues, but ended up that got quite a lot of acknowledgement online. And for that and a few other things, I just ended up with my following growing a little bit. Just by chance, I was lucky enough that 3 days later, on the BT bus, one of the names that got confirmed, didn't I know it at the time, but like a couple of days later when they actually confirmed the talent I was getting the interview, Paige was one of them. And I was very lucky that I got the choice because I turned up early because, failing to prepare's preparing to fail and all that stuff. But I turned up to do the interview early, so they asked me who I wanted first. I said Paige would be great because the only question, proper question I had written down was ask Paige about the comments. Do your, journalistic duty in terms of closing that circle and making sure you ask her, because full transparency is always what you want in these interviews. You don't want to look like another slimy journalist trying to do a gotcha type article. So I ended up doing that, asked her about it, got a really good answer, and that night Triple H actually publicly apologized on Twitter to Paige, which obviously I was to blame for. At that point, I actually thought my WWE contacts were going to be down the pan. I thought I was never going to interview with WWE ever again. Luckily, that's not been the case, because I think they obviously acknowledged it wasn't my fault that Triple H said something that wasn't very nice, which he didn't obviously mean it to not be very nice. He was just trying to make a joke and probably try to get out answering the question that I asked them. But I ended up, it was all fine. And, been doing interviews ever since, and of course, been working with BBC, which is great, doing the odd wee video for them. Not as much as I'd like, of course, but doing the odd wee video for them and inside the ropes and getting to do that. But I'll move on. I'm conscious of time. I don't want to be taking up too much of your time. If you're still listening and you haven't turned off, of course, because I'd have probably turned off for less than 5 minutes in if I was a listener to this. But the other two things that I kind of wanted to hit on in this podcast, and then if there's any questions, feel free to send them to me and I'll answer them on the next podcast or on Twitter or whatever. But the other things I wanted to hit on, one of them was about inside information and sources, because that's always something that I thought most people are making it up, and quite a lot of them are. But I was always like, most people are making it up. I'll never be that guy. I'll never be an insider sources guy. I'll always just get my information right for the wrestler. Right for the right for the horse's mouth on an interview on video, and then that means that I can't be held culpable for anything that doesn't come to fruition. Then what happens is you suddenly just for years of making contacts, years of posting on Twitter, years of posting articles, years of getting in touch with people for interviews, years of doing anything wrestling related, you just you somehow end up that you know more people than you think. And I actually completely by accident had, the first couple of times people reached out to me, one person reached out to me, and just gave me information about anyone that has followed me since then will know how difficult it is for me to acknowledge that this was my first exclusive. But they gave me information about a segment on SmackDown that was happening between Sheamus and Jeff Hardy, where a urine sample was taken and a cup of urine was thrown in the face of Seamus. And I was like, right, I'll put it a little hint. I'm not going to cover it because I don't. Like, even though I got it double verified, which is something you always do, minimum two people. But I was like, I don't really know what to, don't really want to put this out there because if it's wrong, I'm going to look like a fool. My career, in inverted commas, career will be over. And then, luckily, another fellow journalist, got it verified. They reached out to me because they knew that I knew, and they didn't want to steal the thunder, so to speak, because they'd seen that I'd posted a little hint about it, which was nice of them. And I've acknowledged that publicly as well, which it was Sean Ross Sapp of Fightful. And he said he'd heard the same thing. So another layer of verification on it, and told me, run the story. If you really don't want to run it, I'll run it, but run the story. And I was like, right, cool, I'll run the story because I wouldn't mind running it if I'm that certain. Even though I was still not certain, I was like 99%, which is a running joke, 99% certain. So I was like, I'll just run the story. Ran the story, and it came to fruition. And which I've been lucky that everything that I've ran has, or mostly, I think one or two are still up in the air as we speak. And one of them I jumped the gun on, I'll acknowledge as well. But I'd done that, I'd run a couple of exclusives. At this time, the outlet that I was writing for had an exclusives guy who, let's just say, me and him have a different viewpoint on what is exclusive news and what's accurate information. And then he ended up half admitting online that he was that it was a fraud. Won't acknowledge him by name because, but that happened. I got to the point where, because the information I knew and the little exclusives I was putting out, one of them which debunked one of his stories about NXT UK closing down, which obviously didn't happen, I was just getting really disenfranchised with the full wrestling writing thing. And I even got to the point where I was like, do you know what, I'm just going to quit. And I put out a message last September 2020, and I was like, do you know what, I've quit my gig. If nothing comes for this, nothing comes for it, and there we go, that's us. I've had a good run. I've interviewed a lot of brilliant people. I've got to do a lot of things that, most people that have been covering wrestling for 10, 20 years probably don't get to do. So I've been very lucky, and if that's it, that's it. And then I was even luckier that I was inundated with one, support, incredible support for journalists, wrestlers, outlets, just people, just fans, of wrestling, followers, people that followed me on Twitter. Absolutely amazing. Got a lot of love, and then got a few offers of, let's talk about how we get you to be writing about wrestling for somewhere else. And then I met Kenny McIntosh the next day and said no to all the other offers because I was just completely sold into his vision, into what he was doing. As someone that attended a lot of his shows, just really wanted to be part of it. So I've done that. But that's me veering away from the point. The point was exclusives, and of course, just I was always like, I don't want to do the source thing. But then when that first one came up, I was like, right, that was so on the nose, so spot on, that I've garnered enough goodwill that I don't need to. Not that I don't need to be so certain, because I still get it double triple verified, but I don't need to be so nervous next time. A wee bit more confident in myself and put out the information that in the best way you can do it. And since then, I've luckily got to report on people signing with WWE, people signing with AEW, people signing with Impact. And the big one that I got was that WrestleMania was moving to Tampa last year when it was originally meant to be Hollywood. That's the one that I'm proudest of, proudest of getting to report. I've had a few other wee ones, here and there, but that's the big one for me. And that's just the kind of thing where, journalism, like, do it the right way and you'll be on to a winner. I know that that's the same for anything, and then it's like, well, how do I do it the right way? So I always say I've got like a structure how I write an article, and it's the most boring structure ever. I don't do many features. When I do features, I love them because I go wild with them. But my news articles, I literally write a headline, and then my first sentence is like 25 words ish about. Don't go counting them because now you'll go and see that my very long sentence on an article, the first one you check. But about 25 words, just elaborating on on the sentence that you've just put in the headline. And then the next one is elaborating, but setting up, teeing up the actual information it's came from, because obviously if you're not using information that something's came from, you're probably not accurate in your story. So it's either using a quote, using an embed, using your own information if you are the source, which is lovely when you are, and then making sure it's 200 to 300 words, and you're off onto a winner. Choosing a nice photo, making sure it's appealing, making sure you've backlinked to appropriate sources, making sure you've written it well and not got names wrong, which we all still do anyway. Making sure there's no spelling errors and all that kind of stuff. But doing that and doing things the right way is step one. If you keep doing that, repetition, 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 you'll probably end up moving on to the interviews just by, chance how I've done it. And then by chance doing it for long enough, you'll probably end up getting some kind of source. And yeah, even if it's just small things, even if you work with some promotions will want to work with you to put out stuff about TV deals and that. I've sadly not got to that level. I don't get fed information for any companies, despite what some people might say as well. But sometimes that will happen, especially with younger promotions. They might want to give you an exclusive, or they might want to give you at least a press release first, so you can have the exclusive, which is great. And yeah, just getting your name on press releases. AEW are really good for that. They are really open with their media in terms of sending on press releases and stuff, and Impact as well are great with it. WWE are as well. It's just more of a closed circle to get into. You need to show that you've got a big enough platform, which is, not a problem. People always moan about the mainstream outlets getting access, and I don't like. Contrary to what a lot of people say, I don't get a massive amount of access. I'm very grateful for the stuff I get. Very grateful to, I got to interview Shawn Michaels, which was mind-blowing, for BBC. But, most WWE stuff is for mainstream outlets, and rightfully so, because if a mainstream outlet covers it, me writing for a wrestling site is going to cover it from the mainstream outlet. Me getting the interview for a wrestling site, the mainstream outlet's probably not going to cover it. They've done it a couple of times and I've been lucky, but they're probably not going to cover me interviewing a smaller name. So it's just the way the world works. If you write for a big outlet, you're probably going to get the bigger name interviews. You're probably going to get more interviews more frequently because there's more you can offer the company. It's just the way it is. But I'm again kind of digressing on that. This is like a mind map where I've gone on to, I've chucked a bowl of spaghetti against the ceiling, and this is all the words that are coming out. But that's pretty much, I think, everything I can tell you on actual writing. How I got into journalism, it turned into a really half-assed tutor session, which is not good because, like I said, I don't do this for a living. I maybe could. I wouldn't want to say I definitely could. I could definitely earn a lot of money and do it for a living because it is difficult. And I wouldn't want to say I definitely couldn't because I feel like I've been doing it for long enough that I maybe could. But I always say, if you're gonna ask someone for advice, don't ask me. No, I'll try and give you it, but if you're looking for advice, the people to not even go and bug. I mean, they might give you a reply, and they're all really nice people, so they probably will. But on the UK side of things, Alex McCarthy has been great with me. Alex McCarthy of TalkSport, Matty Paddock, Alistair McGeorge, they are like the three best UK-based journalists by a mile for me. In terms of wrestling, of course. And then if you're looking at America, depending on what you're looking for, but obviously Sean Ross Sapp is the guy that I've mentioned before. I don't remember him ever being wrong, which is great. And then obviously you've got the likes of Dave Meltzer and things like that, who've just got years of experience behind them. David Bixenspan is one that, in terms of reporting stuff that no one else will be able to find out, he's insane at getting that. He's absolutely brilliant at it. But yeah, there's just a lot of people that you should go and check out their work. And then you also get a broad view, because a lot of the names I mentioned there, none of their coverage is anything like one another. I'm not quite sure. I don't think I'm very similar to them, but I'm not on the same level as them. But I'm not anywhere near like being what any of them cover in terms of their style. They all do different styles. I've got a different style as well, just the way it is. So if you go and look at what they're doing, you'll probably find that you take wee influences for here, influences for there. And that's, I think, the best way to, I'm not saying copy people's work, but the best way to be good at something is by looking at what the people that are good at are doing. If you're a kid and you want to be a footballer, you're probably going to want to look at Lionel Messi, Cristiano Ronaldo. So why would you not do the same for any other field? Look at the people that are good at doing it, And the one last thing that I want to cover, I actually should have probably covered this a while ago, but the one last thing I'll say is I mentioned earlier that integrity is a big thing. So if you're gonna be covering wrestling journalism, and if you're not, even if you just read about wrestling journalism, the one thing that you'll notice a lot is clickbait. And to an extent, I'm not gonna sit here and say don't be clickbait at all, because I mean, clicks make the company money and the money pays your bills, so you kind of need to be somewhere in the middle. But my big thing is make sure you're not disappointing people when they open an article. Like, that's the most annoying thing. I done it for years. I had to do it based on the outlet I was with. At Inside the Ropes, we've got a completely different vision. We don't want people to be disappointed when they open the article. We want them to be able to open the article and go, oh, I've enjoyed the fact I've opened it. I'm getting more context to the headline. I'm not misled by the headline. I get to actually read something that is substantial, has substance to it, and is good. My least favourite thing ever is when people are like, the former WWE champion, WWE Hall of Famer, and it is like a small name that they've done a wee loophole to get their way into that story and make it look like a big story, and then you end up really disappointed. The main thing to do, I think, is act with integrity, because that, I think, is how I've managed to at least build like a modest following, get decent interviews, because I don't think, I hope not, I don't think any wrestlers hate me. And that's not a bad thing if they do, because I mean, you need to report the way that you need to report. But even when I've interviewed, if anyone has seen it recently, I interviewed Big Cass, and I've done the same thing with him as I've done with the Good Brothers, where I essentially spoiled his debut. I reported on it the day of it happening, and it's the kind of thing where it's probably an unwritten rule. You're probably not meant to ask people about it. But if I'm interviewing the guy and I want good answers from him, I'm going to address the elephant in the room. I'm going to try and break the ice with that, and at least they'll know that, this guy is honest, he's straight down the line, and he's not gonna be the kind of guy that's gonna try and do gotcha journalism and try and make me look like an idiot. Because the main thing that I always say, while there's difficult things you need to cover in wrestling, while there's difficult, situations that happen and you would be remiss not to cover them where legally possible, we're all here because we love wrestling. We all like the same niche thing that a lot of people think is ridiculous. So why would you go and tear other people down that like it? Why would you try and do gotcha journalism on the journal on the wrestlers, the people that are essentially paying your bills? Because if they're not doing stuff, then you're not doing stuff. And that's not to say like bow down to them, because there's obviously plenty of wrestlers, plenty of them are nice people, plenty of them are not nice people. It's just the way, the world is. There's so many wrestlers that obviously they're not all bound to be incredible people that you share the same mindset with. But the best thing you can do is work with them in some way to try and get good answers. If you need to ask them difficult questions, ask them. But always act with integrity towards the reader, towards the wrestler, towards anybody. And then if they are horrible to you, then that's on them. Like, if you're nice to them and they're horrible to you, they're the one that looks bad. And I acknowledge that you can't just be nice to everybody all the time, but it's always worth trying. So for me, that's the main thing. I feel like I went off on a complete tangent, but we're coming to the time where I think it's getting to the point where I've spoken too long, you've listened too long, but thanks for listening. And I'm not too sure what the next episode is going to be. If you've managed to get to this point, you probably deserve some say in what the next episode's going to be. I feel like I'm going to cover a lot, not just wrestling, not just writing. And I feel like the first episode was a bit of a slog, because obviously I'm talking about wrestling writing and not a lot of people care about it. But hopefully, if you're listening to this and you've got to this point, you have cared about it enough to take something from it. But if there's anything that you feel like I should be covering, please give me a shout on Twitter. You can do that at Wrestling Gary. You probably already follow that if you're listening to this. But I also have an account for this podcast, Catch Up with Cassidy, and that is just at Catch Cassidy. You can watch it on, or you can't watch it because it's audio only for now, but I might do a few video ones. But you can listen to it at garycassidy.co.uk/podcast. And that would be absolutely amazing if you do that. But yeah, just give me a shout on Twitter. Let me know what you think I should be covering. Let me know if you liked this, hated it. If it was too long, it's probably been too long, but let me know what you think. And yep, thank you once again for listening. And hopefully you'll stick around for episode 2.